and welcome to Como Explained. It's a podcast from the KBIA newsroom that takes some of the thorny issues and politics that affect our community and breaks them down. I'm Scott Pham, the digital content director here at KBIA. Today we have two co-hosts. One of them is Ryan Femuliner, news director, assistant news director. I'm sorry, Ryan.
Oh, gosh. I was like, what happened? What happened? When did I become news director? Did I miss a memo?
I didn't write that part down, and I just forget everything about you. And our other co-host is Laura Wegman, city editor at the Columbia Tribune.
Correct. Yes.
There you go.
Okay. Well, how are you guys doing today?
Great.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So today we're talking about balloons. And this, Laura, when we first...
You just threw that out there like it was normal. We're talking about balloons.
No.
Of course.
Yeah. Today we're talking about hot air balloons because there's a lot of them in the sky. This was actually your idea, Laura, which I am not putting on you. I am crediting you with.
No pressure.
Because I think it's actually a great idea.
Right. I mean, I've lived in Columbia for a long time, but have never, I guess, pursued the answer to this question of why sometimes there will be so many hot air balloons in the sky. And, you know, especially in the evening, you'll notice this. And so I suggested that perhaps that was a question we could investigate here. So you guys were willing to go along with it, which is great. And I think we found some answers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've actually explained it, explained the balloon problem. So if this has ever bothered you before, if it keeps you up at night, why there's so many balloons in Columbia, we're going to explain it today and you'll know.
So who'd you track down, Scott, to figure this out?
So I called the first I Googled, and I found one company that sells balloon rides, because I figured it's got to be some kind of commercial operation, called Balloon Stormers. It's kind of a mom-and-pop operation owned by Gary and Janice Sines. And so I called them up, and I asked sometimes – you know, I asked them, you know, like, sometimes you see like six or seven of them in the sky. Why are there so many balloons up there? Are you guys just doing amazing business? Are people just going up all the time? But apparently, not only is there a business in town, Balloon Stormers, that sells balloon rides, but there's also a ballooning community, and they fly together. So on any given night where you see maybe a lot of balloons up in the sky, at most two of them are going to be from Balloon Stormers, because they're generally a two-pilot operation. And then the rest of them are just going to be hobbyists, people in Columbia that own balloons and like to fly.
So it's just they're up there on their own? Like no random passengers, maybe a friend or something? Or
Yeah, they just like to fly. And I asked them, like, why do you fly together? And they didn't have a great answer, but it wasn't a bad answer. They said it's just more fun together. It's just nice to be up there with a bunch of other balloons.
So they will, like, coordinate. They'll get a hold, like, drop emails or something to each other and say, hey, we're going out this Sunday. Looks like weather's going to be great.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a little community, but it's not bad for a town our size. There's about 16 people in Columbia that fly, not including the signs. Okay. So theoretically, there could be 16 balloons up there, but probably not.
Okay. You're, again, using a phrase very loosely and comfortably, balloon community. What the heck does that mean? Like, I've never conceptualized a balloon community.
The community, I guess, is kind of loosely centered around this club that Gary has. But really, I feel like if you fly hot air balloons in a town like this, you're just going to know everybody, right?
Right.
You can't not know the other guy that flies balloons.
So yeah. I noticed the other night, some people might have seen this Saturday evening, there were several of those, I guess, hobbyists mostly that were out. And you had asked about that, I know. And they said several of those were there, people in the balloon community that they were out there with. And it was probably around 7 p.m. and I saw, I think, five of them up all at the same time, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty good number to get up there at one time. I asked him about that. Maybe he didn't see them all. He said there were seven. I called up Gary Sines. He said that he and his wife were both out there in two different balloons. And then there were five others from the ballooning community, Ryan. Yeah.
So how did we get a ballooning community? What makes Columbia a ballooning community magnet?
You know, I asked them this, and maybe it's just because I haven't lived here that long. The way I did it was silly. I was like, is this a dumb question? Are there a lot of balloons in Columbia? And they said, no, there are. There really are a lot of balloons in Columbia. For a town this size, it's a lot more balloons than you'd think. And the reason for that was that there used to be kind of a scene here. Between 1995 and 1997, there was the National Hot Air Balloon Championship, which is a competition that you have to qualify for. It's a pretty kind of up-there competition for balloonists around the country. So that brought a lot of attention. It kind of raised the profile of ballooning in Colombia. And as a result of that, people started to learn how to fly and they started to get into it.
Yeah. And so that didn't pop out of nowhere either, right? I mean, I guess there was a lead up to this. There had been some other events before that, right?
Yeah. There was Gary Sines is really the kind of center and the beginning of the ballooning.
The balloon godfather.
Balloon godfather. is the seed of the ballooning community in Colombia. So when he heard that the festival was coming to town, he threw some events beforehand. So in the early 90s, he had a few events he called the Show Me Boone Classic. These are regional competitions that would bring in, he said, about 30 balloons or so. And then after the national competition, he started another event called the U.S. Cellular Balloon Classic from 1998 to 1999.
All right.
So we had a solid decade of yearly ballooning events. Not a solid decade. Most of a decade of yearly events here in Colombia.
I think it even continued a little bit into the 2000s because I had seen some of my research showed, I think they maybe brought back that U.S. Cellular Classic around 2002. I think it was still around in some form. And then the Show Me State Games, we'll talk about a little later, also had some ballooning. So, but yeah, in the last decade, it's, I think, kind of gone by the wayside. So a lot of people here now aren't aware of that history.
Well, and so all these people are coming in from all over the country, right, to compete in this thing. But so why do we still have people here? Did they just, like, stay here? Or did new people spring up that are interested? Yeah, who's the current community, I guess?
Yeah, well, generally the competitors, they came here and then they left and they went back to wherever they were from. Yeah, but I think what happened was that after a few years of seeing it every year and just kind of being aware of it, it kind of just kind of got it into people's minds that, hey, this is a hobby I could do. So after these competitions, people started approaching Gary Sines, at this point one of the only balloonists in town, and they said, could you train me? So he would train other pilots. He's trained almost all the pilots that are here in Colombia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And again, there's maybe a dozen or so, something like that.
Yeah, you said about 16. You seem pretty confident about that number.
Oh,
I have not independently verified, but this is what I'm told.
Okay, so did he explain to you like what happens during a balloon competition or a balloon race? Like, what does this even mean?
Yeah. He says he calls it a balloon race, but it's not really a race. It's not about speed, and the reason is you have no control whatsoever of your speed up there in a balloon.
It's all just, like wind, right?
Yeah, you just kind of get up there vertically. You go up, you go down, and really that's about it. And you look for the spot where the wind is good. So really it's about accuracy. It's about trying to get yourself to a target. They'll have a very large kind of target on the ground, and your job is to get as close to it as possible, as low and close to it as possible, so that you can drop a beanbag onto the target. It's not ridiculous, right?
It's a big lawn game, right? It's not like people play bags at a MU tailgate, right? You're trying to put it in a hole, and that's basically what we're doing with these huge contraptions.
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, no, it's giant flying lawn darts.
It's basically what it is.
Yeah. But, you know, I used to go to one of these races when I was a kid in Oregon, and some of them got, like, really, really close. They would get, 20 feet up in the air, right over the target, and then it's very easy. They just kind of drop it in. I have no idea how they get that kind of accuracy.
But then what if you're just really bad at ballooning, but you're great at throwing, right? So you might actually, like, there's some guy that just really ticks everyone off because he's so accurate at throwing.
And he's got like the high school football player champ on his basket.
And he just chucks it from 300 yards away puts it right on the target.
Yeah, sometimes the balloonists don't get that close, and they really do have to just kind of chuck it and hope for the best.
Okay. Well, and I looked that up, too. We'll talk about the FAA earlier. There is a loophole, because I was thinking, like, is it okay to just drop stuff out of the air onto the ground? The FAA, we'll talk about them later, because they really kind of have a lot to do with ballooning, but they have a little loophole that allows you to drop things from balloons as long as it's safe and controlled. So it's all okay. These aren't rogue balloon competitions going on out there, if that was one of your concerns, because it was one of mine.
Yeah, I'm glad you looked it up and thought about that. Is it legal to have a balloon race?
There you go.
Looks
your
like
answer.
It is.
So yeah, Laura, you were talking about we still have some competitions, though, or have recently, beyond the heyday
more.
In the 90s, right?
Right, yeah. It kind of extended into the 2000s a little bit. So, as I had mentioned, there was the U.S. Cellular Balloon Classic right around the turn of the millennium. And then there was the Show Me State Games had started balloon competitions, I believe, in 2001. And then it seems like they didn't last very long. Like, they did them, I think, in 2002 and 2003, and then all mention of them dropped off the face of the internet, as far as I could tell. And so I could never find an explanation, but it seems like that was a short-lived phenomenon. And then a few years later, in 2007, they brought back something kind of related back to the national festival that had happened in the 90s, which was called the Columbia Balloon Invitational. And that took place in South Columbia at the Corporate Lake area. And they had about 30 balloonists in that, so comparable to those earliest festivals in the 90s. And it was actually a pre-qualifier for the Nationals that, you know, had previously been held here. So there was a tie to that event. So that lasted for 2 years. But since then, I don't think we've really had much in the way of ballooning other than the hobbyists that you see occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you were saying, too, you found out that actually the air balloon championships in the 90s actually had like some pretty big impacts on the city business-wise and infrastructure
right.
even, right?
So that was a really big deal, I think, for the city to get that 3-year deal to host the Nationals. And one thing that came out of it was that the National people were concerned that if they had it at the Boone County Fairgrounds, at the time there wasn't that Oakland Gravel Road interchange that we have there today. So that was basically built in large part because of the balloon festival. Like, the reason that the county put money toward that project was basically they said, you need to build this or we're not going to come here, I think, essentially. So they did, and that accommodated, you know, close to a couple 100,000 people at the peak, although they expected about 300,000. So I guess slight fail in terms of attendance, but it was still a huge event.
It sounds kind of crazy, though. This was the 90s, right? So this was like 2.5 times the size of the population of Columbia up for ballooning. So,
right.
So, yeah, I mean, below expectations, but not a small event.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's way larger than any of these massive events we see now, like, you know, the Roots and Blues or True False. I mean, those bring in tens of thousands of people, but you're talking about hundreds of thousands. So it's kind of hard to even imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty interesting that, again, back in the heyday, it was a huge thing. But now we've, again, got this kind of remnant now where all of a sudden people – and that makes sense, too, if, you know, there's that many people coming in. It's such an exciting thing every year. You know, it's kind of like True False, like you said. So many people are interested in documentary film now in Columbia that probably would have never been interested in it. So if there's just some big world-class event here every year, of course it's going to stir up some interest. That makes sense.
And just a little footnote to that, it wasn't like – it happened here and then we did something and they decided to go away. I think the 3 years was set out from the beginning for us hosting that. And then after it was here, it was hosted for the next 3 years by a small town in Illinois near Champaign, Illinois. So that's why it left.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of our other like hypotheses, right, when we started talking about this was that maybe there was something about Columbia that made it ideal for balloon flight, right?
Yeah, I thought it might have been geographical or something.
Yeah, but what goes into a balloon flight? Like what... I don't know, Scott, I know you found out a lot about this. What goes into it? How does that process go? And why does it work in Columbia, I guess?
Yeah. What they do is they want to find the time of day where you have the calmest weather. So it's just after sunrise and just before sunset. They can't fly at night, not because – I don't think it's necessarily because of navigation, but because the FAA won't let them. They worry about a plane running into it or something. So, which I think is a fair reason to be skeptical. So what you got to do is you got to find a good launch site, a good place where you can set up and inflate your balloon, which is really quite large and have a lot of room. So there's a bunch of different launch sites around town that they know of. They need to have multiple launch sites because they're not sure where the wind is going to go until shortly before they fly. So they get some idea of that, and then they say, okay, well, maybe we'll launch at this baseball diamond south of town. The wind will take us north-ish, we're hoping, and then we'll land somewhere north of town. And that's generally how they plan. So they have the launch site down, and they know where they're going to be taking off of, but they have very little idea of where they're landing.
Which to me was kind of crazy at first because I'm thinking like, you know, rural areas, you're landing in some guy's yard. You don't know if that guy's going to run out with a shotgun, right? I mean, people may not be thrilled about a hot air balloon just landing in their front yard or on their prize tomatoes or something like that, right?
Yeah, that's one area where Colombia actually is a better than average place to fly, I think, because you have a lot of awareness about ballooning here. So I think people, you know, they think of balloons as harmless, they're not going to be too worried about it. They see them in the sky all the time. It's not going to be so strange.
Yeah. It was funny, like on Intersection this week, one of our guests, Michelle Baumstark, the spokesperson for the Columbia School Board, or Columbia Public Schools, rather, actually said out of nowhere, she's like, oh, yeah, it's a hot air balloon landed in my yard over the weekend, probably from one of those saw over the weekend.
Sure.
And she was just, and I was thinking, like, you know, I asked, like, is that, what was your reaction? They just thought it was cool, right? I mean, it was kind of like, wow, how cool, this hot air balloon just showed up in my yard.
Yeah. You know? But, you know, when ballooning got started, which was about 200 years ago in France, people didn't always know what a hot air balloon was, you know?
Yeah.
If you lived out in the country or something, maybe you didn't get the ballooning times or something, and you had no idea what this weird, like, on-fire object was landing in your backyard. So it became tradition for the balloonist to carry champagne with them in the basket. So then when you landed, you can say, hey, sorry, I'm in your yard. Here's a drink.
And so that's something everybody does now too?
Yeah, they've continued that tradition till now. So usually, most of the time, there's nobody around, so they just drink it themselves. So I guess it's just something to do like while you're packing up. But if one of these does land in your backyard, I think by tradition, you are entitled to a glass of champagne.
Oh, good to know.
You should take advantage of that.
Good
say,
to know.
Hey, how you doing? Nice balloon. Where's your champagne?
Again, we were trying to figure out at the beginning why we had all these hypotheses on why this might have been a place where we have all these balloons. And one of them I thought of was, I've seen a lot of them with logos on them, right? Boone County National Bank, Missouri Lottery, stuff like that. And I thought maybe that was part of the reason. Does that play a factor that people get balloons cheaper or something like that because they're sponsored? Or
I think the only people right now that have advertisements on their balloons are the signs, because they do have a business operation. Most people, I think, are doing it just for fun. But there's two ways to get advertisements on your balloons. One of them is actually to build the balloon with that advertisement on it. It's obviously much more rare to do that, but it'll look nicer and it'll be basically permanent. The other method is what's called bannering a balloon, where you kind of adhere something to the balloon, and they say that a really good bannered balloon looks like a totally new balloon, that you can do it well enough that it'll look seamless.
I have a little anecdote that I saw just before I came over here. I was reading some stories about the 1995 Nationals, and someone wrote in a question to the Tribune at the time, and it said, why did the Boone County Fire District pay for a hot air balloon with taxpayer money? Apparently there was a balloon. It is some part of the festivities that had a Boone County Fire District advertisement on it. And this person was angry about the money that potentially was spent on that. So the answer to the question was actually that they did what you just discussed, which was they put a banner on it, and they got it really cheap. There was someone who wanted to promote the cause of like fire safety awareness. So they got a banner on the balloon for 18 days for $150. So
what?
Yeah.
Great price.
That is a really good price.
Oh, my God.
So they were like, we thought that was pretty good bang for our buck. That's the explanation for what you saw. Sorry, taxpayer.
Yeah, wow. That's like one web banner ad for like a day in today's world.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
Jesus.
I'm guessing the rates are higher today, and that was probably a special deal for them, but still.
Yeah.
You know, probably worth the money, I guess, so.
Yeah, a lot of you mentioned it earlier that there's the two balloons that could be up at any given time that have for commercial use, that have passengers on them that are paying to be on. How do you get to do that? How much does that cost?
So the signs have a four-passenger balloon and a two-passenger balloon. So if you want what's called a private charter, and note that there's the pilot's going to be there, so it's really you, your friend, and the pilot, but that'll cost you $550 for a flight. If you want to be one person in a four-passenger balloon, that'll be $225 per person.
Does that include the champagne?
I think it includes the champagne, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, yeah, like you said, that's an important point to note, that there is someone else there with you, because you may think this is a really romantic thing, and it very well may be, but you're definitely hoping that the pilot's not going to completely cramp your style in a very small space. So keep your expectations realistic, I guess. They're not going to let you just fly it on your own or something like that.
But if you wanted to fly it on your own,
oh yeah, actually,
then what would you do?
That was a great question, and I looked into this, and I mentioned earlier the FAA is involved, which makes sense, right? You can't just go out and do this on your own without the FAA saying it's okay. So you do actually have to get a license. And depending on what kind of license, if you want to have a commercial license and be like these guys at Balloon Stormers and charge people to fly with you, you have to get this. Those are the ones that have the highest restrictions on what you have to do. You have to be 18 years old, which actually to me didn't seem that old. You have to read, speak, and understand English. You don't have to have a medical certificate or anything like that, but you do have to certify that you don't know that you have any medical defects that are going to make you unable to pilot. You know, you don't have – are prone to seizures or something like that. You would want to know that before you're going to go flying something up in the air. But you do have to get some training, of course. You have to get 35 hours of flight time as a pilot, including 20 hours in a balloon, 6 under the supervision of instructors, some solo flights. You have to get at least 5,000 feet in the air. So you have to do some pretty significant stuff. You also have to pass written tests that are the same for any pilot, for an airline pilot. You have to pass the same exact written tests so that you're actually aware of all the aviation standards and guidelines and signals and all of that. Obviously, a lot of those aren't going to come into play when you're not near an airport, but you still have to be aware of all that. So it's not a small task by any means.
Ryan, you're making it sound like it's really hard to get a license, but how many hours in the air do you need?
You have to have, for a commercial flight, you have to have 35 hours of flight time.
And for a non-commercial?
For non-commercial, for a private pilot, that's a good point. You only have to have actually 10 hours in a balloon to get a private license.
Yeah, doesn't that sound kind of crazy?
It is kind of crazy. And you only have to go 3,000 feet up in the air. And you only have to be 16 years old. That was the one that kind of made me go, whoa, like I don't even trust 16-year-olds on the road, let alone up in the air. A lot of the other things still apply. You have to speak English. And you have to be able, know how to use the balloon, that type of stuff. You have to pass some certifications. But yeah, only 10 hours of flight time. It actually is relatively accessible when you think about it. Obviously, it's still a pretty big commitment. You're going to have to do a lot of studying and figure things out and still get time with these flight instructors, which I guess we have two that can do that in town. And we'll do that for private licenses. But for these private ones, it seems a little looser than I would have thought.
10 flights and a lot of studying and
yeah, actually and only 6 flights. You only have to have 6 flights up to amounting to 10 hours.
Oh wow. Yeah. Okay. I just said 10 because typically the flights go for 45 minutes to an hour, but I guess you can go longer.
Yeah. Yeah, you could for the training purposes anyway.
Yeah. So Laura, your paper actually covered this thing that happened last spring. A balloon actually had a crash landing.
Did not have enough training.
Right. Well, actually, no, that's the funny thing about it. He had quite a bit of experience. He had first gotten his license. This pilot that was involved in a hot air balloon incident had gotten his license, I believe, back in the 1980s. But he had kind of been on and off over the years, but still had like several years cumulative experience piloting hot air balloons as a hobbyist. So anyway, what happened was back in May 2012, there was a hot air balloon that flew into a power pole up in North Boone County off Highway 124, and it caught on fire. They had been trying to land and in a grassy area and sort of just miscalculated how fast they were going. And so hit this power pole, the basket kind of slid off, and then the canopy of the balloon, the envelope, it caught and it kind of stopped the fall a little bit. So it ended up that the two people in the basket were not injured because of that. But then the balloon was on fire. So they had these, we haven't really talked about this, but a lot of times I think balloonists will have what's called chasers with them, people who are basically there to assist. The chasers came and cut the balloon so that they could get out while the top part was burning, essentially, and they were able to escape without any injuries. So they had been, they had taken off in Columbia at Alpha Heart Lewis School and had been flying around for like an hour or so, and then it was getting dark and they were trying to land, and that was when this happened. So I think even an experienced pilot, things like that can happen.
Yeah.
But, it seems like it's fairly rare. I mean, that's the only incident I can remember like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm told that balloon flying is generally a very, very safe activity. But just in concept, it kind of terrifies me a little bit, Like, you're in a basket, and then
there's fire.
Yeah, there's fire.
And you're in the sky.
There's nothing but you, a basket, and a big pod of explosive material.
Right.
And you're in a random field because you weren't planning on landing somewhere.
Yeah.
And there's somebody on the ground with a shotgun.
And you have no idea where you're going. Nothing but a bottle of champagne to defend yourself.
They just want their champagne. That's all.
Yeah.
Those chasers are a great idea, right?
Yeah, I mean, they are. Well, it's also necessary because the balloon and the basket are quite heavy, and you need somebody with a truck to bring it back.
Sure. Yeah. Did they ever try to actually plan out their routes and say they're going to land somewhere, or is that just too? Is it not feasible?
I think it's just not practical. I think they could give it a shot, but you need to be able to improvise when you're up there. I think that's one of the things that a skilled pilot can do, that they can pick a spot in their trajectory and they can land there really accurately if they're really good, but they have no control over where that trajectory is.
I see.
So, Ryan, we've been talking a lot about Columbia and its ballooning scene and really in the last few years of it, kind of the lack of big ballooning events here, but there still are ballooning events in Missouri, not here very often.
There are, and actually, this ended up being super timely because they're all coming up very soon. There's an event in Brookfield, Missouri, which I didn't know where that was. It's actually about halfway between Macon and Chillicothe, and it's called the Great Pershing Balloon Derby. So that's coming up August 29th, September 2nd. There's a big one in St. Louis, September 20th and 21st.
And that's a very old one, I'm told.
Yeah, the Forest Park balloon race was either 37 to or 41 years old. I can't remember which one.
It's 41 years old.
41, okay. And Brooksfield, I think, is the one that was 37 years old.
Yeah.
But then there's another one in October, 18th to 20th, down in Branson, Balloons Over Branson. That's a new one. It's only the second year. And I was reading through their events last year, and it was kind of sad because there was a breaking memo, urgent memo, all flights canceled tonight due to weather, which is one of the probably a problem with scheduling these out, right, is that, again, you talked about it. It's also reliant on weather.
Especially in the summer, which is stormy.
Right, yeah. Right. So there are, if we've gotten you completely fired up, pun intended, about balloons, there are your opportunities to go see some not too far away. But yeah, it's something that still happens. Did they say if the signs, did they say if they take part in some of these festivals and stuff all across the country still?
Or? Yeah, they do. They compete. They race. That is, they play space lawn darts, and they travel around the country all the time. And sometimes, actually, I knew I was going to find a way to fit this in. Sometimes they get to bring their special balloons, and they'll actually get paid to bring their specially shaped balloons because it's just kind of interesting for the crowd.
So they're not shaped like balloons.
They are non-balloon-shaped balloons. They have one. I think I've seen it before. It's they call it the world's biggest gumball machine because it's shaped like a gumball machine.
Okay.
And it's pretty cool. They have another one that's called Coco the Clown, and it's just absolutely terrifying. It's the scariest thing. A big, just all lit up with the flame inside of it and those eyes.
Bring that out for Halloween.
Yeah, but they like to travel with those and show those off to the crowds.
Okay.
Is that it?
I think so. Yeah. I don't know.
Anybody else got anything else?
All right.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for Como Explained. I am Scott Pham. My co-hosts are Laura Wegman and Ryan Famuliner. We just want to mention real quick that we have a ton of really good ways to listen to Como Explained. If you're on the KBIA website right now, listening online, that's okay, but we really prefer it if you download it. I think it's more convenient for you. You can find us on the iTunes store. Just search for Como Explained. It's the only thing that pops up. Look for us on KBIA.org. Subscribe and get a new MP3 on your computer every Wednesday. While you're on our iTunes page, rate us or leave us a comment there. We really, really like the comments. We really like to hear from you. Email us at news@kbia.org or tweet us @KBIA. All right, thanks a lot for listening. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.